It's better over here.
After investing billions to light up our network, T-Mobile is America's largest 5G network. Plus, right now, you can switch, keep your phone, and we'll pay it off up to $800. See how you can save on every plan versus Verizon and AT&T at T-Mobile.com/keep and switch.
Up to 4 lines via virtual prepaid card. Allow 15 days. Qualifying unlocked device, credit, service, ported 90 plus days with device and eligible carrier and timely redemption required. Card has no cash access and expires in 6 months.
Broadcasting live from the Hyundai Studios, presented by your local Hyundai dealers. This is Chicago's number one and most listened to sports station. 670 The Score is Chicago Sports. Chicago Sports is The Score. WSCR and HD Chicago. WBMX HD2 Chicago. Always live on the free Odyssey app.
The Score!
We're back with more of The Score Overnight Special, Remembering Les Grobstein. Here's another classic Grobber moment on The Score.
He was on a team that, without that offense,
Come on, Les.
They're coming to take me away, ha-ha. They're coming to take me away, ho-ho, hee-hee, ha-ha. It's a funny farm.
You earned that one, Jack.
He didn't earn that. No, he didn't. Cutler's better.
Actually, I did.
Adam, how old were you in 1985?
Stop. It doesn't matter.
Adam, how old were you in 1985?
It doesn't matter, Les.
It does matter.
No, it doesn't.
I was at every single game.
Jay Cutler's better.
I've been at every game Cutler has played as a Bear, and I was at every game in 85. You weren't.
Well,
I don't care.
I wasn't ever. Are you talking me or Adam?
No. Both of you.
Okay. Well, I don't know who Adam is, but Adam, you're exactly right. There's no question.
You're both crazy. You're both crazy.
How can you say that?
I just did. Watch
Cutler's
my lips.
Better. Okay.
Both of you. That's the best part of that.
Who are you talking to? Lips.
Hey, you talking to me or Adam? I don't know Adam, but I agree with
him. All the
extra details of that, just so good. I don't know Adam, but like I got who are you talking about? Me either. I'm talking to both of you. Straighten up. Oh man, I loved it. Like it got like with Les. Sometimes it would just get real with him. Like there was no pushing him off. Look, we all play a little radio from time to time, but sometimes Les would get locked in when let's just call it an episode. Les would have an episode that he would be so angry, as you just heard him there with, I believe, Adam Harris, one of his old overnight producers. In fact, I'm positive. I know him. That was Adam Harris that you heard in the background. So it truly is incredible when he has those episodes, and there is just no pushing him off of that position. All right. As we welcome you back into the Les Grobstein Memorial Show, a year ago yesterday, Les died. We lost Les. And so we're fortunate enough to be able to do a Les tribute show until 5 o'clock this morning. We've had a lot of fun. You can check it out on the Odyssey app if you missed any of the hours and you'd like to go back, odyssey.com. And who do we have? Well, we had Scott Grobstein on. We had Kathy, his girlfriend, longtime girlfriend. John Greenberg was just on from The Athletic. And now that brings us to my guy Mark Potash with the Chicago Sun-Times, writes for the Bears. And certainly, Potsy, you appreciated a guy like Les Grobstein. I know that.
Oh, absolutely, Mark. And thanks for doing this show. I think it's great. We need more overnights. That's
Amen.
A subtle hint. but yeah, it's it's hard to believe it's been a year, and I got to tell you, I feel the same sense of emptiness and loss now because, I think I might have told you this last year when we talked, it's just kind of took Les for granted, and he was the kind of guy you just always thought he would be there, and now that he's not, I feel his loss all the time. And I have to admit, it was another thing that it was interesting from my perspective is that as I get older, I just didn't listen as much to Les as much because you're just older, you're tired. I sleep more. I can't go without sleep like I used to. So I feel regret in that respect too. And that, it's happened a lot, in our business to people who, when we're in our business, we know people, we work with people all the time. We see them at games and stuff like that, and yet you really don't take the time to really spend, you know, there's certain people that are kind of on the fringes a little bit, Chet, we lost Chet, Les, I know John talked about JD, and John Mullen, we lost him too. So every time this happens, I say, wow, I really have to strengthen some of the relationships I have. So I kind of feel regret there, because as much as I feel like I knew Les really well, I don't feel like I got to appreciate him until he was gone. And that's kind of tough. So, but I don't want to bring you down. I know this really should be a celebration, that's just how I feel emotionally about it. But yeah, it's always, I tell you, it's always great just listening to the show, listening to Jonathan, just listening to the stories. Les, just even when he's not here, he still it just has an uplifting presence on the score just in general. So, and even when, it's funny, even he always makes you smile. Like one of the things with the Bears this year is Matt Eberflus's defense is the key position is the three technique. Every time I hear the three technique, I think of Les and I laugh. I mean,
yes,
it's just so, I mean, almost like every day you get a constant reminder of how much fun it was to have Les around. But like I said, also a little melancholy because, like I said, he was one of those guys you thought would always be there, and now he's not. And that's kind of difficult.
Yeah, and it's a good lesson, man, too. Like what you were saying about how, you wished you were maybe closer with some of the guys that we lost, or like there's people in our lives who we're friends with at work or whatever the case may be, and we identify a person as, you know what, that's somebody I'd really like to hang out with. And then you just never do it just because, especially as you said, as we get older and there are things that we need to be beholden to other than socializing. But I think that like that happens to me. Like I'm thinking about that right now. There's a lot of people that I'm like, God, I want to hang out with that person, and then never do. And then we lose them. And then there's that regret. I think that that's what you're feeling. And I think that that's something that I can relate to, man.
Yeah. And that's, I guess, a lesson for younger people. I am 63. And so as I get older, I'm finding that more and more, feeling those pangs of regret when anybody, people I know, whether in the business or out, who pass away. And sure. So, the lesson is, when you're younger, take advantage of whatever opportunities you have. And it's hard to do. It is hard to do in this day and age, especially as you get older and you have families and stuff like that, and we're all so busy. I mean, this year, not to go too far off track, this bear season just kind of flew by for me. I mean, it's just amazing how, like, when you work in especially a seasonal type situation where you're working every day for like 6 months, man, it goes by in a hurry. So life goes by quickly, and it's really hard. When you mentioned that, I'm thinking of people. Well, I really need to get into. I could spend like a week just reconnecting with people that I really feel like I need to. So that's just a part of life. But Les was a big part of that. So it's tough to not have him, or especially with such a, you talk about a unique personality, and also a unique show. Literally, his shoes can't be filled.
It's so true, man. And I was thinking too, I'm listening to the promo coming in where Les is admonishing those that would dare think that, McMahon is better than Cutler or vice versa. And then I'm thinking to myself, well, you know what? Now that we've had a little time that's passed and we're not in the midst of the Cutler rush, who was a better quarterback? Was Les, does Les get more points now? Like, I'm sure Cutler was a better pure quarterback than Jim McMahon, but when you put everything together, aren't there a few more points in favor of McMahon now that we've cooled from the Cutler era?
Yeah. Mark, I was rolling my eyes as I heard that conversation, intro, because those are polar opposites of what I'm looking for in a quarterback. Jay Cutler was the kind of guy who will totally tease you, totally fool you. He'll make some great plays, and then you'll think he's good, but you'll think he's much better than he is. But he's not. But he's just doesn't have the it factor, or whatever you want to call it, that a guy like Jim McMahon did. Jim McMahon lifted every single guy on that team the moment he stepped on the on the field. I think it was Ron Wolf talking about Brett Favre. I remember talking to him when I was doing some stories on the early years of the Packers' rise. And he said, "You know, how'd you find Favre? He traded for him from Atlanta." He said, "I just felt like when he stepped on the field, he tilted the field in your way." And McMahon, to a little lesser degree, was the same way for the Bears. And so that's what you want in a quarterback. So yeah, I would be. You know, I'm a lot like less in that situation where I have no finesse and. And I would be arguing the same way Les was with those callers, because to me there's just no question. I understand why people think, and rightfully, that Jay Cutler, obviously better arm talent, whatever, but
and
like
numbers.
I mean,
numbers. That's what people are looking at.
Oh, and, you know? And production wise, but a lot. You know, I mean, Jim McMahon has a number in his favor too. He's like 47-9 when he's a starter or something
like
that.
And he was a really good, accurate,
he was
smart
a winner. And
yeah.
He was a winner, and I don't mean to disparage Cutler, but a lot of times he's like, he was one of those guys who was always in the wrong place at the wrong time. Like, he would have a bad defense, or like he came to the Bears and Brian Urlacher got injured and was out for the year. He had many different – he had always had a different coordinator. Well, sometimes – a lot of times that was his fault because he didn't suffer fools gladly, and he just had trouble relating to people. So, I mean, a lot of these things were his fault. A lot of things were not his fault, like how bad the defenses were. Even in the one year in Denver, they lost the last three games of the year. They were 8-5 and leading the division. They lost the last three games and missed the playoffs. And I think it was 08.
Mm-hmm.
The defense was gave up like 40 points a game or something. I can't remember. But anyway, always in the wrong place at the wrong time. And Jim McMahon, I think, except for the injury situation, was the opposite of that. That's one of those Chicago sports kind of things. Is if only Jim McMahon was able to stay healthy, the Bears would have probably won another Super Bowl and at least gotten to another one. You know what I'm saying? It would have been much better than it was. That was the key to the whole thing, was Jim McMahon. So anyway, to answer your question, I'll be honest, it's ludicrous to think that Jay Cutler was a better quarterback than Jim McMahon, for the reasons I stated.
Yeah, no, I do agree with you, man. And now you're making me – we're going down a little wormhole here, but that's the beauty of you and I talking, man. This is what we do in person, and damn it, that's what we're going to do on the radio. You're talking about, like, Jay Cutler being in the wrong place at the wrong time, surrounded by the wrong defense with Denver. Did the Broncos ultimately fleece the Bears in that trade?
Wow, I'd have to think about that. Let's see. The Bears did get something out of it. I mean, Jay Cutler did get them to the NFC Championship game, and he was good. He kind of gave them, you know, they would have been in a lot of ways they would have been worse without him. So it wasn't that. But I don't think they made out that great with the draft picks. And Kyle Orton, I think they won the first six games with Orton.
Yeah.
But then they didn't make the playoffs that year either.
Right. So like his career with the Bears.
So it was the same thing. So it was one of those things where, like, almost like neither team won. It's almost like the 49ers and the Bears with the Trubisky trade. I'm trying to think exactly how that. I see. We need Les here. He would have every single stat and number and player. Again, that's another thing that when you look at it, you know, almost like no winner. So I don't know who won. I don't know who you would say would won. I mean, it certainly helped the Bears, but it also kind of hurt the Bears a little bit, and that kind of relates to something I've been saying this season, is that I think the Bears are better off with where Justin Fields is now. I'm more optimistic about the Bears quarterback situation at this point now than I was at almost any point in the Cutler era, because Cutler kind of fooled you. He would lead you to think that you really had something here, and unfortunately, because of a lot of intangibles that he did not have, in my opinion, he would ultimately hold you back. And I'm talking about just, you know, his lack of concentration and key moments. He'd always make a bad mistake. He just couldn't, you know, he couldn't be consistent. He struggled to really have a good relationship with his offensive coordinators. You know, he's shoving Jamarcus Webb, and he's running away from Mike Tice, and he's telling Mike Martz to go bleep off.
You.
And he had all these kinds of issues that kind of nullified, all the physical things. So in a way, Cutler helped the Bears, and in another way, he hurt them because he kept convincing. You know, they kept getting. You know, they got. They hired Trestman because they had Cutler. I mean, you know, they had Adam Gase because of Cutler.
And so it's kind of
a double-edged sword, I think. It's a two-sided thing where, yeah, you can say Cutler. I mean, obviously, look at his numbers. He's, like, statistically the, you know, best Bears quarterback of all time, you know, as far as yardage and stuff like that, touchdowns. But I think I just think in general he's a guy who probably might have been better off playing another position. I think he would have been a really good NFL safety. He was a real good athlete. In fact, when he was at Vanderbilt, his freshman year, they actually played him in practice for 1 week at safety, just to see what they had. And nothing came of it, but it just shows you how much doubt there was about him as a quarterback. I mean, if he was as good as he should have been, nobody would have played him at safety. But Cutler was always an interesting guy. He was a guy, you know, a big guy at a small school in Indiana, but yet only like two schools recruited him as a quarterback. Everybody wanted him to play defense.
That's crazy.
And I think Ron Turner was one of the guys at Illinois who I think even offered him, and even that fell through. There was an issue with that. So people knew that. That there was something missing there. And, you know, again, not to disparage him, but, I mean, that's just what I saw from covering him and stuff like that. There was some, you know, and you see it in quarterbacks who are really talented. You know, he's kind of a poor man's Philip Rivers. Philip Rivers had struggled, too, put up big numbers, come up, and then in key moments would falter. I think Herbert is actually, he's got a lot of Philip Rivers and Jay Cutler in him, of being in the wrong place at the wrong time for a guy that everybody, all the film guys love him. I mean, they love him.
Yeah, and I'm a little surprised you're going here.
I'm dubious about Justin Herbert. Not that I'm not saying he's a flop or whatever, but he seems like the kind of guy who is always in the wrong place at the wrong time and will make a great throw that you will just think that nobody else in the world can do, that not even like guys like Josh Allen and Patrick Mahomes could do, and they fall in love with him. But boy, it's just weird how, like, you know, and like that one game where he was like, he had a terrible bad shoulder or something, and he was great. And then at the end, boom, makes the mistake. So he's kind of like that, too.
You know who's sort of like that? You know who I'm thinking of when you say that? Brett Favre.
Yeah, but Brett Favre, well, no, Brett Favre won a Super Bowl. Brett Favre would, here's the difference. Brett Favre would make those stupid mistakes in the beginning of the game, too.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying? He wouldn't make them at the end. And also, he got more out of, like, he was a gunslinger, and he paid the price for it, but he got more benefit out of it. I would not put Brett Favre in their class as far as that kind of thing, because I think Brett Favre was a winner. I think he had that, like I said, that it factor or whatever, and made people better. So I really wouldn't include him. But I guess my general point is not to just, you know, it's like some guys can pitch the eighth inning, some guys can pitch the ninth inning.
Yeah.
Says nothing. There's nothing wrong with the guy who can only pitch the eighth inning. It's just some people are able to focus in clutch moments. I always tell the story, probably told you, when I'm covering the 92, we're really getting off track here.
Don't worry, man.
I'm covering the 92 Bulls NBA Finals, and it's game 6 against the Trailblazers. And those were when the media, we were even the fringe media like myself, we were on the floor. So we'd really good vantage point. So the Bulls fall behind, and then Bobby Hanson and Stacey King and all that backup group gets them back in the game.
Yeah.
Even to the point where there was a point where you would have put Jordan and Pippen back in, but Phil Jackson kept them in there because they were playing so well together. So then finally, at the very end, now you get the guys to put the hammer down. And there was a shot. You'll have to look at the game itself. There was a one point where I think Jordan takes a shot at the elbow, and I just happened to be at the right angle where I could just look it right into his eyes, and you could just see the proverbial daggers. The guy just had and he hit this key shot that just that totaled it. It was a dagger. It was a clincher. And what you could, my point is, you could see that this was a guy who could, you know, he missed. He'd shoot 9 for 25 some days.
Sure. But,
you know, something in clutch moments. Some guys can focus in early in the game. Some guys can focus late in the game. Jordan was the ultimate in being able to focus at the end of the game. And so what I'm saying is there's no shame in not being able to do that. If you can only pitch the guy, I never fault the guys who can only pitch the eighth inning and not the ninth, because, you know, some guys have it and some guys don't. But the point is, and going back to the quarterbacks, is that, you know, there's a lot of intangibles with quarterbacks. I love Joe Burrow. I think he's got the it factor. I think yesterday was a great example, or Sunday, whatever, was a great example of a guy not playing at his best. But you know something? Things always seem to happen for him, including the other team playing stupid and the quarterback trying to leap over the line when he's at the 2 yard line and a fumble. Some guys just have it. And if it would have come, and if it would have, you know, if they would have scored and it would have come, and Joe Burrow would have needed to play his best in that final drive in the fourth quarter, I think his history is that he would have done it, because he's got an ability. You saw it at LSU. He's got an ability to focus in key moments. He's got it.
He's got
and
it.
So anyway, I can't remember. We were talking about Cutler, I think it was. But I guess some guys have it and some guys don't. Now, some guys are just lucky. Like Patrick Mahomes has like the bonus of not only having it, but going to the perfect team for him. It's like Marino in '83 when he went. You know, he was the last quarterback drafted, but he was the luckiest because he went to a Super Bowl team. And the same thing with Mahomes. He went to he was the second quarterback in the draft, but he went to the perfect team, the perfect coach. Would he be the same quarterback on the, if he were drafted by the Bears, if they took him number 3 or number 2?
Who knows? I have
he'd
no
be
idea.
Better. He'd be better than what they had. But you know, a lot of it. So I guess what I'm saying is a lot of it is circumstantial.
Sure.
But a lot of it is intangibles and just having what it takes to not only make yourself better in key moments, but to just make other players better as well. And so I think that's really the differentiation between a guy like Cutler, going back to the very original point, a guy like Cutler and a guy like McMahon.
And but by the way, first of all, man, that the story that you told about seeing MJ's eyes in '92,
yeah, it was just a perfect angle. It was just a snapshot in time.
That's great stuff. I mean, that
it just
is,
told it. Just it's, you know, it's, you can't quantify it, but I experienced it, and you saw. This is why Michael Jordan is Michael Jordan. Not because he is so much better than everybody, but just because he had that ability to focus when it mattered most. And that's a key thing in any of, you know, in all these professional sports, why some guys can do that and some guys can't. And I know that because I'm not that in anything I do. I am a total choke artist. So I have an appreciation for that. I mean, there's certain things I'm good at, but not in the clutch. I just cannot focus. I can't, you know, it's like I can write, but I can't be on TV because it's always, you got to be, you know, you got to be able to think on your feet, and I just can't do it. I'm too easily distracted.
So I wouldn't
be good at that. So I guess what I'm saying is that's from personal experience. I know how important that is because I can't do it.
Yeah, no, I think I'm too disorganized to be the daggers. Like, I'm more of a Brian Scalabrine, really. I just put me in when the pressure is well off, and I'll be just fine in one of your games.
Well, what's funny about that is, like one thing I do well is I'm a competitive bowler, but I'm a total choke artist. I mean, I just cannot focus, and I totally outthink myself. But there are still times where I come through and strike out in the 10th frame or whatever, but it's not because of mental toughness, it's just because I'm good at it. So that's another kind of lesson, is sometimes you'll see a guy who has a reputation and then he'll win a game late and people think, oh, see, now he's got mental toughness. No, some guys are just so good at things that they can, you know, like Cutler had a couple games early in whatever year it was, I think it was against the Bengals and the Vikings, where he had like a fourth quarter touchdown pass or something like that. I mean, sometimes guys are just so good, they can do it even in a tough moment. Just because you don't have mental toughness doesn't doesn't mean you, like, choke every time.
Right.
That also makes it confusing because it's not absolute one way or the other.
Yeah, I mean, the thing with Cutler was everybody was just hoping that his talent would overpower everything, and including
Cutler. It could. For some guys, it could. Like, if you put him on a really good team, like, you know, a team with a great defense, he would have won a Super Bowl.
Really?
But, yeah, oh, yeah, if you put Cutler on a team with a really good defense and a good running game, just had, I mean, everything, he had to have the wind totally at his back. He had great talent. I mean, and he was competitive, and he had a lot of good qualities as a quarterback. But just, I think, being focused in clutch moments and being consistent, you know, were just not two of them.
Well, we were talking about that the other day. You, me, and Joniak were talking about there's a lot of offensive talent surrounding him. When they had Alshon Jeffrey and Brandon Marshall and Martellus Bennett, I mean, they had some big-time – I'm probably missing somebody, but there were some big-time weapons on those teams.
Yeah, but the defense was bad. There was always something. I've written that about 10 times with Cutler. There's always something. Something always happens.
Right.
The
timing,
Bears were in great shape. You know, and sometimes it's just bad luck. Like, the Bears were in great shape, and I can't remember what year it was. They all run together, but they were 7. They were 7-3. They were beating the Chargers, ironically, our friend Rivers. Philip Rivers. They, at the time, I think that was the year that the Packers were 15-1. And at the time, they were undefeated, but the Bears were hot, and they had won like 5 in a row. They were 7-3. They were looking like the best chance to upend the Packers in the playoffs. And it was at the end of the Chargers game, and Johnny Knox slips on that turf at Soldier Field, turf monster. Again,
yep.
He slips. The ball is not only is the ball intercepted, but Jay Cutler breaks his thumb, not even tackling, just going after the interceptor.
That's right.
And then the Bears lost like their next 5 games. They went to Caleb Haney. Caleb Haney, who looked like he was going to be good. I thought he was going to be good, but was so bad he actually got replaced by, I think, Josh McCown in the last game. I can't remember. But anyway, that was a sign that just told you what bad luck that Cutler had. Even when things were going his way, the Bears were looking great. He was playing well. Somebody slips and it works out, you know, and it just went bad for him.
Yeah,
so it's just
that's an interesting.
You know, some guys have all the
look at Jay Cutler. That's a very, that's not one I'd really ever thought of, but it is true. I mean, you've laid it out very well from his days at Vanderbilt and then with Denver and then obviously with the Bears. A lot of it's on him, like trying to throw into triple coverage like he did. But you're right; it took him a while to be. I mean, I remember when he was here for a while before they got Brandon Marshall and Alshon Jeffrey. The whole thing was this guy needs somebody who is taller than Devin Hester, and then was it Brandon Aromashadu who everybody was like, this is the guy because he's 6'2". So yes, there was and the offensive lines tended to suck around Cutler.
They were. Well, the one year was the one year that I think was Kyle Long's rookie year when they all played all 16 games, and that was the year that the Bears were second in the NFL in total points.
What was the year where he got sacked 9 times in the first half against the Giants?
Oh, against the Giants, yeah. That was not, I don't think that was 2013, but that was not as good. But, that was part of it. There was always something. He, at one point, didn't have the receivers. Then he didn't have the offensive line, didn't have the defense, you know. Just always needed everything going his way and never could get it. So that's why he didn't win any bigger, you know, than he did. So, you know, that's kind of the Bears. That's kind of the Bears' fate because Jay Cutler, like, you know, just like Brandon Marshall. You know, it's interesting that Ryan Pohl said the other day. You know, do you need a number one? Well, you know, it'd be nice to have one, but I don't feel I have to have one. You know, he can win without one, and that was kind of the way that Jerry Angelo was very resistant. That was a big, if you remember, that was a big cry in the Lovie Smith era. It was that the Bears needed some big number one, receiver, and Jerry Angelo resisted that. Well, when Jerry Angelo was fired and Phil Emery came in, like, the first thing he did was he traded for Brandon Marshall, and he was hailed as a genius. I mean, it was just as, you know, it was a glorious thing. He finally got the Bears the player they needed. But look what happened. He was really productive, but ultimately kind of destructive, kind of self-destructive.
Yeah,
and a tough guy to have. I won't say a bad guy, but a tough guy just wasn't good for your locker room. Too many distractions. No. And so I guess my original point on this was that even when the Bears get the guy they really need badly, which was the quarterback in Cutler, the wide receiver in Brandon Marshall, unfortunately, those are guys that it's really tough to win with. I guess that's the best way of putting it. And, you know, Brandon Marshall, believe it or not, he's going to be one of the few Hall of Famers never was in the playoffs.
That's unbelievable.
And just, you know, and if you look at the record of how many times they had a chance, just near misses and stuff, and you wonder, why are these guys always in the wrong place at the wrong time?
Yeah, that's another guy.
Some guys are, I guess. I guess that's part of the Bears' plight, right? Is even when they get the guy they want, it something always seems to go wrong. So that's what they're trying to pull themselves out of yet again.
Let's go there. Let's go to Justin Fields. And here's what I'll say, and I want to get your response to it. The Bears brass is getting closer to saying that Justin Fields is their guy, no doubt about it, but they're still not quite there because, they're seeing what the rest of the world is seeing, is that he's not a complete product yet. You agree with that?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's pretty accurate, but I just think they're kind of pot committed at this point because of, you know, what they have, and because unless if you're referring to like the draft or whatever, I mean, they're not going to draft a quarter. I don't think they are.
I don't think so either. Yeah.
Unless there's I almost have to take that back, because if you would have told me that, let's say this was 2017, and what if they would have fallen in love with Patrick Mahomes and made him the number one pick? Well, on paper, Patrick Mahomes was no more revered than C.J. Stroud or Bryce Young or any of these guys. I mean, I covered those drafts. I remember that. And nobody, you know, they thought saw potential, but no more potential than these other guys. So if Ryan Poles thinks one of these guys is that good, you know, it will probably get panned if it happens, but it wouldn't, I guess I have to admit, it wouldn't be that surprising, because if you just apply it to 2017 and somebody would have taken Mahomes, look what you would have had, you know, assuming Mahomes wouldn't have been a total flop with the Bears. You know what I'm saying? It's hard to,
right.
These guys are modular. You don't know, but I'm based on what I've seen, I think he would have still been the best quarterback in that draft. Even with the Bears, I think. I don't know. So anyway, I don't know. I've kind of contradicted myself, I guess. I don't think there's a quarterback on paper right now who would be so far above what you potentially have in Fields that you would do that. And plus the draft haul you're going to get, I think, and that's just thinking it out, you know, almost, you know, just trying to figure it out. It just seems like with at least one or two teams, you know, needing a quarterback and Houston not having the number one pick anymore, I think that draft haul is going to be pretty enticing too. And with a team that needs as much help, it just makes sense that staying staying with Fields and seeing what you can get there is the better option. But that said, I will say I agree. He's no sure thing, and he shows a lot of flaws that. It's not just a matter of time. It's like when you saw Herbert last year, he was so good. You know, it's just a matter of time before he really became really good. But it's not a matter of time. He actually has to get better at a lot of things. Fields, yeah. I'm talking about. So there's nothing for sure. But the Bears are, like I said, pot committed. I think they have to go. Go with what they've got, because they just have so many other holes, and because Fields can develop into a good passing quarterback, then you've got gold.
I think that he has to. I mean, like, the evidence, like, I'm just looking at the quarterback numbers from all these playoff games. We saw what Dak Prescott did last night, maybe his best game ever, 305 yards and four touchdowns. By the way, Brady threw the ball 66 times last night. But Brock Purdy, where the hell did he come from? He had 332 yards and three TDs for San Fran. Trevor Lawrence, 288, four TDs. He actually had four picks as well. Josh Allen, 352 and three TDs. Daniel Jones, 301 yards passing and two TDs. He also had 78 yards running. Joe Burrow, who we talked about, had just 209, but we know the game that he played and how clutch he was. So, in other words, I mean, this is just a little sampling, you know, right here that I'm doing in real time. You still got to be able to throw the ball a lot to win in the NFL. That's obvious.
And it's the same question we had at the beginning of the year when the question was, have you given him enough support, you know, to see exactly what you got? And they didn't. They, as it turned out, they didn't. But we still don't know, chicken or the egg, is the passing game bad because of the quarterback, or is the quarterback bad because they just don't have the receivers, the offensive line, whatever?
Right.
It's just hard to tell. I'd lean more towards it being the supporting cast. I think you give him a better one, but still he hasn't shown that he's got what I call, I know people don't like this, he doesn't have the it factor. He hasn't shown, I'm not saying he doesn't have it, he hasn't shown the it factor where you make players better. I mean, who in this offense was better than they should have been? Cole Kmet had better numbers, but that was a natural advancement from a second to a third year player. I mean, Mooney's numbers were down.
Yep.
All these guys, you know, St. Brown, N'Keal Harry, none of these guys, you know, Pettis and Pringle, none of them were. You know, he didn't make anybody better than they were. What's that?
No, you're right. Go on.
Denigrate him. I'm just saying, in all objectivity, I can't say he's shown an intangible that I look for in a quarterback, and that's an ability to make other players better, to raise your game in the clutch, and kind of almost will guys to make the catches, you know, to make plays, which is what good quarterbacks frankly do. I know you can't quantify it, but that's what happens. But that doesn't mean he can't develop that. I'm just saying, if it, you know, it goes back to what we always talked about with Cutler, was the instinct thing. How much instinct does Justin Fields actually have? I'm talking about instinct for the position.
Right, right.
I'll be honest, I don't know at this point in time. And that doesn't mean you can't. Doesn't mean you have to have that to be good or even win a Super Bowl. You can win without it, but that often with all these quote-unquote elite guys is what makes them, and I can't say that I've seen that from him. But again, the offense has to evolve and has to be better in year two than it was in year one. So feels that it deserves to at least get that and see what happens. So because now that's the one thing, is he's still got a better starting point than they ever had with Trubisky. You know, just because the big plays he can make and the fear he strikes in an opposition with his running game, which Trubisky was a good runner at his best. Even at his best, he never struck fear. He never forced you to change your game plan.
True.
which is what Fields does. It's a great starting point if they get this passing offense in gear next year. So we'll see. But I think it's even though you can't, you know, they won three games. To me, it's a much better starting point than they've had in previous years with Trubisky and in most years with Cutler, except some of the early ones.
Do you ever remember anything like this season where the Bears had a devastating 10-game losing streak? That's really bad. And because
of what... Wasn't that devastating to me?
I know. It didn't feel
like... I'm not saying I was rooting for them to lose or it was better for them to lose.
I'm just saying objectively, when you hear a team, an NFL team, has a 10-game losing streak, that's about as bad and putrid and awful as it gets. But it did not feel that way. I didn't feel that way. You just said you didn't feel that way. So I'm asking you, has there ever been a season even close to being like that? The Bears have, you know, 6-game losing streaks the previous 2 years, and we go nuts.
Yeah, you know, I said this was one of the best bad seasons the Bears have ever had. Have had in a long time, since the end of the Ditka era.
It's so true.
Because there was at least a purpose to it, and you didn't try to lose. And in some respects, they were worse. Their passing game was worse than it should have been. Their defense was worse than it should have been. Those are things that could be end up being red flags, down the road. But in 2012, the Bears were like 7-1 and lost. It looked like 5 out of 6. They ended up going 10-6. That was a worse last second half of the season than this was, because that was the end of the Lovey era. They were on the arrow was pointing down, and now the arrow is a little bit tilted up, but at least it's not down. Mm-hmm. And so I thought this was a very bearable year for me, no pun intended, because the reason why it's kind of so weird is because it was the cleanest rebuild they've ever had. Nobody's ever totally torn it down like this.
It's
because
exact.
Even though Pace had a tear down in his first year, he still had Cutler. And you still had that kind of in the way. And that's what I was talking about before, how that kind of got you to think, whenever you have a guy like Cutler, you always think you can be a winner. Well, they even with Justin Fields, they didn't expect to win, more than 7 or 8 games, and they ended up winning 3. So to answer your question, if there was one, was that I just don't think this was – I think this was in context. This was not as bad as 10 yeah. games in a row, 3-14 would look, because it wasn't what you wanted. But when you're built to win 6 and you win 3, I don't think it's that disastrous.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess you're right. It's the weirest thing I've ever...
I don't know if I'm right, to tell you the truth. I know there's another side of that argument, but that's just the way I saw it. I mean, next year, I've always said, Mark, 2020, the clock starts on Eberflus and Poles in 2023.
Oh,
and we are, the league year starts on the 15th of March.
Oh, yeah.
And technically, officially, that's when it is, but basically it's right now. Now is when the clock starts.
Five games into the season this year, you won't not hear the defensive coordinator's name. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
Al Williams got away with a lot this year. If the defense stinks 3 games,
the questions will be a lot tougher next year. They need to be. They need to win these close games. The quarterback has to take a significant step. The offense has to take a significant step. And, they've got to win 8 or 9 games to avoid a lot of skepticism about where the direction they're heading. It happens. It's probably, maybe it's unfair in the big context of building a football team, but that's where we are today, where, year two, especially when you've made year one so purposely bad, year two needs to show needs to show a lot more progress. They had an easy year. The questions will be, and I can tell you, the questions will be a lot tougher if they don't make a lot of progress.
Bears fans 2023. Are like, Bears fans are like, you get 1 year. We're not gonna watch everything you do this 1 year, but next year it's on. And Potsy, thanks so much, man. We'll see you out at, I assume you'll be out at the press conference later on today for the new president and CEO of the Bears, Kevin Warren, at noon today, brother.
Yeah, absolutely I will. I'm looking forward to that.
All right, Potsy, thanks for coming on.
Thanks again for doing this show. I really appreciate it as a listener and as your friend.
Yeah, thank you, Mark. Same, man. And I know that it is tough to be up this late, but you're a trooper, and I appreciate it. And we'll talk to you
soon. Like the old days when I actually got to listen to Les. So it's been a good thing for me to do this. So I appreciate it.
Oh, good. Awesome, man. Thanks, Mark. I'll talk to you soon.
All right, Mark.
Man.
Talk to you later.
Yep. And, the Bears will introduce their new president and CEO, Kevin Warren, today at noon. And we'll be carrying the press conference live right here on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. And I am being told that Kevin Warren, the Bears' new president and CEO, will be on The Score live. 1 o'clock on the Bernstein and Holmes show. So, man, that's going to be great to just get to see what this guy, Kevin Warren, is all about and what he will be overseeing other than a new stadium, how much power he will have, how much influence will he have when it comes to Ryan Poles. Folks, there are a lot of good questions for Kevin Warren. And I want to get to some of your calls here. And for people waiting, I appreciate you doing that. A lot of good text messages, too, as we honor the life of Les Grobstein. We lost Les a year ago yesterday, and we have the opportunity until 5 o'clock this morning to share stories of Les Grobstein or just talk about sports the way Les Grobstein would. This is Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
We're back with more of the Score Overnight Special, Remembering Les Grobstein. Here's another classic Grobber moment on the Score.
Also, the other night, Les gave us, you know, I don't throw this around too often, but a potential runner-up for quote of the year. Here he goes.
I don't care about the Miami Heat's history. The hell with them. And the horse that rode in on them.
Oh, Chris Tannehill, you spent too much time on the
but I got to thank my tipsters for that.
That's one. Mining gold on that one, though.
I don't care about the Miami Heat's history. The hell with them. And the horse that rode in on them.
Ah, classic Grobber. Good stuff. 312-644-6767. Let's go back to the phones and... I do apologize for, man, Allison. Is this Allison?
It sure is, Mark. How are you?
I am doing really well, Allison. Thanks for waiting. I appreciate you doing that. What is on your mind about our buddy Les Grobstein?
Well, I tell you, Kathy has been keeping me awake all night. It's been quite a great show, and the thing that's so funny with Les is no one has mentioned yet tonight about his mentorship. Now, you have to understand that Les and I go back, let's see, 1988 was the year that I met Les. Understand I was like 5 years old. No, I wasn't. I was actually doing a Special Olympics charity broadcast and asked him to do it because, you know, he was everywhere. And a year later, I got an internship with WBEZ, and I was in the press box. And Les was virtually the only other person that I knew in the press box. And the thing that was so important about him was that he was like a tiger when it came to protecting me. I was one of very few people in there. I mean, we had Cheryl Ray Stout, who I know you know.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
We had Cheryl. Cheryl preceded me by a few years. There was Carrie Muscat, who was the great reporter from UPI and MLB.com. There were a handful of people from TV, maybe like a couple of them. And so we women were very few in those days. And the thing that was great about Les was that he really took me under his wing and kept me there for as long as I've been bouncing in and out of this crazy career. And he would come up, recommend me for jobs. You were talking about a story, by the way, that I was actually in the room where it happened, the one with Bob Glass and Tony La Russa.
Oh my God! You heard that? You heard it earlier. That was so great.
I am also a Grody fan. You know that.
I appreciate that. Yes.
You know, and so I mean, you've been a good friend when we've met up at Bears games and things like that, and so I've appreciated that. But I was in the room when Tony La Russa exploded, and Les and I actually were the only two individuals who had tape recorders, and it was a real small press conference. It was a real small room. the Sox weren't that good that year, and so it was long just not of interest at that point. And I remember cowering behind Les and just going, okay, Mike's out. I'm not getting involved in this. I'm not going to try to ask a question. I'm not going to do anything. I'm just going to let the tape recorder put that on. And I remember George Hoffman saying to me the next day, wow, that tape has been everywhere. And I'm like, damn, I wish I could have gotten paid for that. But the thing was, Les continued to mentor me throughout my career. He recommended me for blogs. He recommended me for coming on at the station down the dial for doing sports work with him, sparred with him on a regular basis, but loudly. But the thing was that there was no denying that he was a very proud mentor to so many people in this business, and who were he was a good quarterback that made everybody better around him.
That's such a good reminder about that. That it, although we're having fun and all, there's so many great Les stories, and I certainly have carried on the caricature of Les. It's a great reminder that he was a mentor, as you said, to a lot of people in the business, just like yourself.
Yeah, and the thing was that he was never afraid of being generous with his time, with his talent, with his recommendations, and oh so gentle suggestions on how to do it better. I remember him yelling at me one day when he thought I'd asked a really stupid question of Vinny Del Negro.
Okay.
Do you remember? Yeah. Oh, he's like, you should never ask a question that way. Never. You know.
What did you do? What was the? What do you remember? What the critique was specifically? I'm wondering what I don't know. Les's. I know his style, but I don't know what he doesn't like.
Well, what he didn't like was that I meandered on the question, and. And he's like, you got to make it snappy. You got to make it, better. He goes, you know, you just have to be so much sharper.
Oh, that's hilarious.
And you were. I mean, you know, yeah. And so I would get these critiques every now and again. And but it was all really helpful. And I couldn't dispute what he was saying. Unfortunately, I hated it when he was right, but ultimately it made me a better broadcaster, and it certainly has stood me well wherever I've been public speaking, and to really think about and be thoughtful about what it is that we all want to say. So and I can only imagine how many other people got that same kind of lesson out there.
Yeah, got a lesson. And you, like I was talking about with Greenberg earlier, John Greenberg, he, on top of all of that, his, you know, whatever technical expertise he had in terms of how to do a sports report or all the different things he did, he was a spectacular character and a great personality and pretty much one of one, I think. I mean, I really don't know the comp to Grauber. I really don't.
Yeah, he was amazing. I have one other story that, and I can tell that he's watching over all of us and probably me, because I do a lot of freelance work, and, you know, writing of all kinds and broadcasting and things like that when I have a spare moment. And the thing that was crazy was Les had written all over my LinkedIn page, you know, highly recommended blogging, highly recommended, you know, broadcasting, highly recommended writing, things like that. And I got a call from somebody in a related field. It wasn't broadcasting, but it was using technology. And he said to me, you know, I looked at your LinkedIn profile, and if Les Grobstein recommends you, I want you on my team.
Oh, nice. Wow. That's great.
I mean, I'm like, gosh, Les is still watching over me.
What's that, Allison? We're losing you a little bit there. I'm sorry.
Oh, I'm sorry. I said, Les is still watching over me.
That's amazing. Thank you so much for waiting. And for me, it was well worthwhile. And I think a lot of our listeners and texters appreciated the stories and the insight and to know a different mentorship side of Les Grobstein as well. Thank you so much, Allison.
Absolutely, Mark. Anytime. Take care.
All right, I will talk to you soon. Thank you so much, and I appreciate everybody who is listening right now. I'm Mark Rohde. 312-644-6767 is the number. I'm going to be here until 5 a.m. this morning. It's a Grobber Memorial Show. It was a year ago yesterday that we lost Les, and yes, one of those jarring marking of time. It was a year ago? Really? Yeah. Yeah, that was a year ago, and we are doing the memorial, the tribute show tonight. When we come back, we're going to get some good stories from Mark Carman of CHGO. Mark goes way back with Grobber as well, and I believe, I've heard the story before, but I can't get enough of it, and I don't always remember every detail. Mark Carman helped Les Grobstein move, I think, one time. And I don't know that there really needs to be more to the story, because you could kind of fill in choose your own adventure with a premise like that, I would think. But we'll talk to Mark about that next. We'll also take some of your calls later on. And then the boss will be on at 4 o'clock this morning. One of the people in this industry who made the smart decision of hiring Les Grobstein, and Mitch Rosen will join us at 4 o'clock. I'm Mark Rohde. This is Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.